episode 39. My name is Dave Hunt, and I'm joined by Michael Swick.
We are, well, you're mobile right now, with a portable recording studio. How is it going, Dave?
It's going good. So I'm in Virginia on vacation, and I brought my old Blue Yeti microphone, and I'm sitting in front of the MacBook that my wife usually uses to edit at a desk in a resort. Definitely not my multiple monitor or anything like that that I'm used to at all.
Family's packed into the other room just like, man, hope he's done.
No, we got, so we're on vacation with my in-laws, and we have three separate rooms, so everybody's just in the other two rooms, so.
Okay, so it's not just an awkward situation where everyone's just like, yeah, he does video game stuff, he's in the other room.
Most of the people are pretty supportive, including my wife, who helped troubleshoot all this about an hour ago because Audacity needed an update because it wasn't reading the microphone at all, since I don't think I've used the microphone plug-in to Audacity on my MacBook since E3.
Yeah. I haven't updated Audacity in forever. I think I just ignore every time it wants one.
Yeah, it just wasn't picking up the microphone. And then, of course, you know, Apple being Apple, they've got all their little gates in front of it just to get Discord to pick it up, too. So that was great. So. But it's important for us to try to keep to a schedule as much as we can for you guys. We've only taken 1 week off, and that was after we produced a lot of content. And we talked about taking off this week, but it seems like if everything works out, you guys will be hearing this. If not, it'll be a lost episode.
Yeah, that has broken some other time.
Yeah, so we are Digital Days Gaming. If maybe this is the first time you guys are listening to one of our weekly episodes because you picked us up from the Xbox Showcase, welcome. Feel free to, you know, subscribe, download as much as you can, go back and listen to other stuff if you want to, leave us a review if you can, and then most importantly, just share the show. Retweets on Twitter, shares on Facebook, those are all super helpful ways to get more eyes on our stuff. And as we've broadening our horizon and doing more and more things and covering more and more platforms, we wanted to see if we can get more and more eyes on the show. So go ahead and take a look back. We just did the Xbox Preview Showcase, which seems to be getting some pretty good feedback and sparked some good discussions in our Facebook group and on Twitter as well. So you can just all the links to any of the things that are prevalent for you to join our community are attached on the show notes. And again, just leaving a review is a way for more eyes to see it when they're searching for podcasts. So especially if somebody's like searching for Xbox or anything like that and they want to read reviews, and more recent reviews move us up the charts faster. So any and all of that is always appreciated. This will probably be a little bit of a shorter show because I am on vacation. And there's also the cherry on top of all of it is there is a thunderstorm going on in Virginia right now. And it is my wife and I's 19th anniversary today.
And there's not a lot of news because we did so many podcasts last week. Yeah. So it's like pretty light week, thankfully.
All right.
It would have been real bad if PlayStation made a bunch of announcements or Xbox.
Yeah, we would have figured something out. You know,
gotta cover it.
Just keep in mind this, normally on a normal circumstances, we would be live streaming the show like we have the Xbox Showcase and our other weekly episodes this week. We are not, obviously, I'm not at home in front of my primary setup to be able to do all that stuff. So if you could follow us on Twitch, twitch.tv/digitaldaysgaming. Next time that we do go live for an episode, you'll be notified, and you could come out and join the chat and hang out in there. And then if you so feel so fit to use your Twitch Prime or a Twitch subscription, we are an affiliate, and subscribing to us is a great way to support the show. All right, so we're going to jump into the news, and like Michael said, it is a little bit of a later week.
Yeah, usually we don't talk about video game announcements, but because it's a light week, felt like we might as well just include these, and these are specifically people getting involved with like spiritual successors of games they worked on in the past. So the creator and writer of the Suikoden series, Yoshitaka Miyayama, I believe I'm saying that right.
Sounds good.
He and his studio, Rabbit and Bear, launched a Kickstarter for a spiritual successor for those games. Konami, I believe, owns the rights to the game, so that's why he has to go the spiritual successor route. It's Uyoden Chronicles. The crazy thing with this one is Kickstarter started Sunday or Monday with a goal of 500,000, and as we are recording, it is approaching 2 million.
So crazy.
Hit its goal with 31 days left on the campaign.
How can you be somebody like Konami and just look at that amount of money that's built around that and not try to make a partnership with this guy now?
I don't know. Like, Konami just... Or...
And it's not just Konami, though. It's the Mega Man... Well, I guess it is Konami, because they had the Mega Man thing with Mighty No. 9.
It's Capcom.
Capcom, sorry. Whether that was good, bad, or indifferent, like, there's obviously a demand for a spiritual or a sequel to Suikoden. There's obviously, you know, we've talked about Kickstarters that are just pummeling records or pummeling numbers, like, so fast. Like, what's the one that just came out, the third, or hasn't been, Shenmue, right?
Like, yes,
Shenmue was kickstarted as well. And, like, how are these companies, like, at a certain point in time going? And they're obviously, their board is sitting at a table or over, you know, Zoom or something now and saying, no, we don't really need to do that. And then somebody on the call is like, this dude over here just got $2 million in 7 days.
And he's doing it with our name that we own, basically, but yeah. Doesn't have the name to market. I don't know, like, and how... They, like, Konami's next move, because they missed the boat with this, should be to get a team together to do HD remakes
right.
of the Suikoden series if they want in on it.
It just doesn't make any sense, like, where they can, like, one side of the spectrum says, I don't want it, and the other side of the public spectrum, the people that are buying your game, are putting money up front, essentially, and almost kickstarting is almost essentially gambling now with the success rate we've seen of Kickstarter, or the lack of success we've seen from Kickstarter sometimes. So, like, these people are willing to throw, you know, maybe it's only like $15 or $20 a person, like, and I'm sure that that's a lot of money to some people, and to some others it's not, but like, there's obviously demand for certain games, and for these companies to think that there's not, this always shows them that there is. So I don't understand.
It's just kind of crazy how stuff like this just can come up, and this, like, you see the hunger in the fan base for something like this, that they're willing to throw all the money in. Like, this was just announced for PC at like 500,000, and then if it hit 1 million, it would come to PS4, Xbox One, and then if it hit like 1.5, it would be coming to PS5, Xbox One X. It's already hit that.
Mm-hmm.
They've hit all their goals. I hope this is a Kickstarter, though. 500,000 isn't a lot for a video game, so I'm hoping this is one of those ones where they already had partnerships in place, and yeah. This is just basically being used to, like, bolster that.
Hey, you bring a half mil to the table, you got a deal, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, like a down payment on a house right. sort of situation. Yeah. Because like, 2 million is a lot for a Kickstarter, but it is not a lot to make, like, a, you know, like, a big game. We don't know the size of this, but we've definitely seen some games where they get on Kickstarter, they get a bunch of money, and they expand on the game and it just doesn't go anywhere. Mighty No. 9 is kind of mm-hmm. like that, where they just kept getting money and then the development team just kind of
I still don't think that they hit any of those stretch goals. Mighty No. 9 did not, so
yeah, it hit a lot of money, but like, I their Vita version never came out.
Yeah, not that I'm aware of. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it always makes you worry.
Hopefully they have a plan.
Yeah, it just always makes you worry. You know, like, yeah, like you said, like, hopefully that the goals that they put in place, and it sounds like these ones were, you know, were more obtainable. We're like, all right, we're gonna go to PC, and we all know that PC is one of the easiest platforms to develop for. And then, you know, like, okay, then we'll go to current gen, and then we'll do next gen. You know, they're not sitting there trying to say it's going to work on the Switch or it's going to work on the phone. You know.
Though there is now a demand that it's hitting a lot of money of, like, could they make a Switch version work? But hardware is too old, I think, mm-hmm. unless they've already announced that they're doing a Switch version of it. But yeah, at least they're, like, aiming to do this, and there seems like they have a smart plan for scaling in terms of, like, how much money they need. It does also that the consoles are so similar to each other, you know, and PC,
right.
So
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Scaling should be better for them, as opposed to trying to, like, squeeze out whatever they can in, like, foreign hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this, you know, looks like a classic JRPG is gonna be made, and the fan bases for JRPGs is still huge. Hopefully this, like, gets Konami to, like, look at some of their IPs, because they do have a ton of IPs that they're just sitting on that they could, you know, use, but they're not, so...
Yeah, I hope it sells,
hopefully
too.
Hopefully this will... Yeah. Yeah, I just hope it makes, you know, some studios that are sitting on IPs just realize, like, hey, maybe we give it a shot, you know.
And so,
especially
like
this one, it's like the creator wants to do it.
Yeah. It's like you said too, like sometimes it may not even be like a sequel or a spiritual successor. It could just be an upscaling of a game that's, you know, X amount of years old at this point. Just people want to play it, you know, like remove some of the bugs that you had in your game or remove some of the complications that like PS3 or 360 gave you, and let's make a funner, cleaner version that's better. Like somebody's like, hey, you really got to play this game now, and it was good when it had all these bugs and they cleaned all that stuff up, like they did it with Bayonetta. Like people got to play the true version of Bayonetta on PS4, like at the right amount of frames, and versus the PS3 version, which was so clunky from my understanding.
Yeah, like just take advantage of the fact that the Xbox is backwards compatible, you know, completely backwards compatible, or almost. Take advantage of the fact that on PlayStation you can have PS2 classics. The Switch has a virtual console still. Like they could just easily just port games over, make money, and then you're making fans happy in like an easy way of just like, hey, we made this old game available again. Mm-hmm. You don't have to find a cartridge or your PS1 disc that's probably scratched to hell. And just make it available to people, and you'll win a lot of fan service. Like, though I know the corporations don't really care about fan service, but it's I don't understand how you can like leave money on the table. Like, we already know, just talking to developers, like how kind of easy it is for some remasters ports to just like get started and get going on hardware.
Well, most companies say it takes half the time to reimagine or rebuild an existing ecosystem or existing environments, and then to, you know, especially in whatever, you know, however long it's going to be before anybody starts coming back into a studio and you bring 100 people into your studio to do work, like this, you know, even if it takes the same amount of time, like this is still productive work that I feel like your people could be doing, and that should result in some sales. Like THQ Nordic is, or whatever they're called now, they're made a living off of buying older IPs.
Yeah, and it's doing well for them. They continue to make bank on that. So there's another game that just came out of nowhere, another spiritual successor that was announced. This wasn't Kickstarted or anything like that. The video game is called Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, and it is made by the indie devs Team Reptile. And this is basically a Jet Set Radio spiritual successor, with the soundtrack being worked on by the original composer for those games. This one, not a lot of info out on this one. There was like a quick teaser with some music behind it that got a lot of people excited. This one basically took over Twitter and Facebook for like a day of people just excited for another Jet Set Radio-like game. Mm-hmm. And this is like super, like, this is Jet Set Radio, like everything about it, of just like rollerblading, graffiti, music, all of that stuff is just like, oh, they're just making a Jet Set Radio just without the license. But there's definitely a thirst for that one. Every time Sega even hints at something Jet Set Radio, it sets the world on fire. So it's another company that's basically like losing out on potential money. But, you know, like, especially like Sega, they like the Sonic Mania stuff was basically going to like fans and being like, do you want to make a Sonic game? And it turned out really well. This looks like this would be perfect for Sega to also be like, hey, do you want to just name this Jet Set Radio?
Because it would only, you know, like
expand the market.
Yeah, I mean, if you make a deal, again, similar to like we talked about this weekend in Spiritual Success, if you make a deal with Sega to call it Jet Set Radio Remastered, Jet Set Radio 2, Jet Set Radio colon, whatever you want to call it, and you give, you know, Sega gets, I don't even know, like rough numbers, like 25% of the revenue, and you get 75% of the revenue, but you get the name Jet Set Radio on it, like you're going to sell extremely more copies than you would of calling it this Bomb Rush game. Not that that's a bad name, but people are going to remember, like, oh, I remember, you know, they're gonna be like, what is Bomb Rush? And then hopefully that they're, you know, if they Google it or somebody tells them it's Jet Set Radio, they might pick it up, versus it being on the box art or in the digital store saying Jet Set Radio 2.
Yeah, and from Sega's perspective, like, the work's done pretty much, right? You know, it's done by another team. All you're doing is licensing out the name. But I'm hopefully this is successful. I would love another Jet Set Radio. Sega, the most they've done with it recently is like release it on iOS and Android, I believe, and I think they occasionally will re-release it on like PC or think it's been on PC in the last couple of years. But yeah, this looks like exactly what Jet Set Radio fans would want, except it just won't have the name. But it will sound like it, and it looks like it will play like it as well.
Right.
So we're in a hell of a time of just old games kind of coming back, but not in the way you'd expect them to. But overall, just kind of exciting news just to see like fans getting what they want, because publishers don't seem to give a damn enough to give them what they want.
It's weird. Like, I mean, I guess I can't, as a, you know, in the business mind that runs through my head most of the time, like, I can't fathom sitting there being like a CEO of a company like this and watching something get, you know, as you know, like This Weekend in Successor getting $2 million in 7 days and being like, yeah, we can't do that. Like, that's just dumb luck. Okay, dude.
Yeah, we can't do that with our marketing team, our multiple developers. Yeah, it again, it's just them leaving money on the table. We're constantly hearing, especially on the Xbox side, and we hear it from PlayStation people as well, but how important backwards compatibility is, and
or how important they games available. Say it is.
Yes, but we don't really see like the proof of it. You know, we PlayStation, I think Ryan specifically said that like people just don't buy the old games. You know, like they say they want them, but then they don't buy them.
Yeah, but at the same time, look at Shadow of the Colossus. Like, that was the same game, just redone. You know, like, look at all the stuff that Blue Point's been doing over the last couple of years, like, with Sony's money, obviously, like, making the things, you know, run better and look better and, you know, like, a newer version of them, you know, and to sit there and say that, like, Sony now has released three versions of Shadow of the Colossus, I believe. The original, yes. Yeah, the original PS2 version.
The upgraded, remake, yeah, the remaster.
Yeah, so it's like, how can you sit there and say that people don't buy old games? Now, I'm not sitting there saying every game needs to get this treatment, but use your social profile to find out what really needs to. Like, you know, like they used to do those hashtag things. And I mean, hell, like those potato chip companies let you vote on flavors with hashtags. Like, let's vote on some video games that we want. You know? Let those SOCOM and MAG fans go nuts for like a day and think they have some kind of hope.
Yeah, give them just a little bit of hope. But yeah, no, it's just one of those things where you just, you know, Xbox basically went like, hey, everything's backwards compatible, and I'm sure they've seen some success there. It basically just like has been the heart of their gold games for gold, is giving out those old games.
And Game Pass.
PlayStation, and Game Pass. It just fills out the library. PlayStation, I felt, was really lazy with how they did their PS2 classics. They released some big ones, but then they just kind of gave up after a little bit of time. But they kind of just let it happen, and they picked some games that were successful, but they didn't get weird with it, and they could have gotten weird. You know, they could have. I'm surprised we didn't see a lot of people go at it based on how much, you know, they were just porting them over with like better resolution. They weren't doing work into them.
And that's another, that would have been another opportunity for another like check mark in the box of PS Plus, is you get a PS2 classic game every month, and it just introduces people to like, hey, this actually like plays well and works well and it's fun. Let me see what else they're selling. Oh, I want that game. Like, oh, I forgot that one came out. You know, like, it just, you know, again, it's an introduction to the system of like, hey, this actually works, because a lot of times people are, you know, old game is old, and if you give it to them for free and they see that it does look better, and oh wow, there is trophy support, and this is much more easily playable with a DualShock with two analog sticks than it was, you know, before, and you know, then oh, the other game only cost $8, okay, I'll buy it, you know.
Yeah, it felt like for PlayStation specifically, with like backwards compatibility and releasing old games, they just kind of set themselves up for failure, so it could fail on purpose. Like, whoever was in charge of that, maybe just didn't want to do it.
It didn't work. Yeah. We tried.
We tried. we tried for 3 months. Yeah. You know, like we put a shot out.
We gave it a quarter.
Yeah. So I don't know. There's only going to be so many of these Kickstarters that can be spiritual successors and look similar to whatever they're trying to recreate before either publishers are going to finally just jump in and be like, okay, let's do this. I mean, we're seeing Activision do this with, you know, Crash, Spyro, and Tony Hawk. Mm-hmm. But there's all these publishers have decades of portfolios they could be dipping into that they just haven't
I don't really feel like no one's
busted the lawyer out.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like there's really any significant harm to it. Like, I don't know the broad numbers of it, but if it costs a certain couple million dollars to re-release a game, and then you make double that, you know, like, I don't know, like, again, I'm just using round numbers, but if it costs $5 million to remaster, publish a game, and you make $10 million off of it, like, you broke even, and you're probably going to make more than $10 million over time. It's just kind of, it could be you know, it could have a nice spike, and then it could be a slow burn, you know?
Yeah, it's having something dead in your back catalog versus having something just out there that can continuously make money. Even if it's not making a ton of money, you at least then have a product that you can have out for like the next 10 years doing something, as opposed to just being something that's like, yeah, we own that, but doesn't right. contribute anything to like the bottom line.
Yeah, like I said earlier, like THQ bought all of those IPs. Like, they're not going to sit on them. They bought them for a reason. Otherwise, they wouldn't have bought them. Mm-hmm. You know, versus these other companies that have these IPs and they're just sitting on them. Like, how long did Activision sit on Crash? Or Spyro? Or which one? Spyro? Either one. Crash and Spyro.
Yeah, either one. Crash sat on them for a while.
Yeah. So it's just mind-baffling. And again, I'm sure that there's some other data that they're using, maybe. But, I mean, obviously the public data is what I feel like drives the highest factor. And it looks like those Crash and Spyro games did very well, you know.
Yeah. And then you could just, like, leave a game out, and it'll just be available, and then it could just be filler in your Steam sales, your summer arcade sales, you know, and just continuously earn you a little bit of money here and there. But mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess that's why we're not in the business end of video games. We'd probably be frustrated or have the harsh realities of the situation just, like, tell us, like, no, none of this is profitable.
Right. All right, so speaking of profitable...
That's it for news.
Yeah, we're going to have a quick discussion, just because there's been a lot of discussion on our Facebook group, and there's been a lot of discussion on Twitter the last couple of days. So we wanted to just kind of discuss the state of next gen, just briefly, like partially because I'm on vacation and partially because we still don't have enough information yet. So Michael put a note in here, after two showcases, where do you sit or where do you stand on the new consoles in this holiday season? I'm leaning a little bit more towards I'm looking forward to them than I was, you know, if we go back, you know, 60 days, you know, prior to PlayStation's event, prior to Ubisoft's event, prior to Xbox event. But I'm still at the point of at the end of July, like we're at the end of July right now. We don't know dates or prices, and that's still driving me crazy.
Yeah. Let's say we're in August, because we're a couple days from August. Realistically, these would release in November, so we're 3 months out from these consoles being out. Like, and we don't have price, we don't have release dates, we don't even have like a clear launch lineup,
right?
Which is even crazier. Like, all we know is like Spider-Man.
And I think they said Ratchet and Clank is holiday Halo. 2020.
If they did, I would be surprised. But like, and then Xbox, it's like Halo Infinite. And I think Forza is later on. Yeah, Halo Infinite.
even again, like those, like we've beat this horse enough, but those are games that are still coming to Xbox One. So like the showcase, like we talked about at the end of last week's episode, the Xbox episode, like it was a great Xbox showcase for Game Pass. It did an okay job for Series X, but it's not selling, you know, it's not selling me, and it doesn't look like it's selling a ton of people on Xbox Series X's day one. I know you put up a couple polls and people still seem to, like, I think Undecided pretty much won both polls.
Yes. Yeah.
On Twitter and in the Facebook group.
If you want to purchase an Xbox.
Right. And I feel like, you know, PlayStation has at least shown, like we've always talked about, shown reasons why you need to own a PS5. Now, again, are those reasons why you need to own a PS5 in November of 2020? Or are those why you need to own one by November of 2021? Because I'm sorry, but if some of you guys think that, like, the Horizon Zero Dawn is coming out before holiday of 2021, I really need you to share whatever medication you're taking, because I would love to take the same medication.
There's a chance. There's a slight chance.
Not in this environment. Not if
depending
this
on how much.
Not if this COVID doesn't get any better.
They're a European studio. Europe's doing a lot better than the United States. They can pull it out, maybe.
I think if it was, though, I think they would have come more forward with a date and things like that on it. But that still might be. There's supposed to be another rumored state of play like next week. when you guys are listening to this, if you're listening to it pretty early on. So that's also allegedly a rumor of price and date, along with a God of War sequel. So versus Xbox, where we talked about it like on the bottom of their screen, and it came up in the Facebook conversation because I posted a link of, you know, them in the Facebook group and about misinterpretation of the Xbox event. And like we talked about it, the bottom had Xbox One, Xbox Series X, you know, Windows PC on the bottom of all their trailers. And as the showcase went on, you started seeing a little bit more that said Xbox One, or I'm sorry, that said Xbox Series X and Windows PC. And then again, based on what Xbox has said, and I have corrected it and have learned since then that third-party studios can release games exclusively on Series X, exclusively on next-gen consoles if they choose to, and one of those next-gen consoles can be Series X. Microsoft first party, all Xbox studio games have said that they will not be. I think it's 24 months, actually.
Yeah, I think it might be 24 months.
So everything
which means
that
a lot
we
of those
saw
games we saw
would be 2022.
Potentially, yes.
Based on their, it's a lot of 2022. Like, I agree with you, they're probably going to backpedal on that eventually. And even if they backpedal it to 18 months or 15 months, like, I think they'll be okay still. But, it, you know, like, and it sparked a pretty intense debate in the Facebook group about what they were or weren't doing. And, like, it looks like on paper right now, like, Sony is concerned and has plans to sell consoles. And Xbox feels like any additional consoles that they sell is icing on the cake, because I did the math, and I didn't realize how big of a number this was, but I did the math on Game Pass, just doing an average of $9.99 per user based on an old number that they gave out before they started doing a lot of, like, you know, we heard 10 million subscribers like 4 or 5 months ago for Game Pass, and that is like $1 million a month.
Mm-hmm.
Just of revenue just from Game Pass. So if you want to have the debate about who's going to win the console war or who's winning the console war, like, yeah, Sony sold more units, but at this point in time, Microsoft's getting more continuous revenue.
Yeah, they have consistent revenue. The libraries are pretty big. I'm sure the costs on those libraries aren't like crazy. They're I don't know if they're making profit, but they're probably making money, or like at least breaking even with how like their distribution deals go.
Well, Sony has to sell like 2 PS Plus subscriptions for every 1 Game Pass subscription Microsoft sells, just for the money to even out.
Yeah, and the biggest games on PlayStation are free to play technically, so they don't need Plus, correct? Like,
yeah,
Fortnite,
I mean,
does Fortnite need Plus?
I don't think so, because it's a free to play, because Fortnite doesn't, and I don't think Warzone needs
Warzone.
It now. Yeah, I think that Call of Duty does, but Warzone does not.
There is a rumor going around that next-gen Xbox Live will be free they push towards,
I think it's
going to
be bundled
Game
into Game Pass. It's going to just be bundled in Game Pass. You're going to buy Game Pass Ultimate, and you're going to get it, which I think you already get it.
Yeah. Yeah, you already get it with Ultimate, not with just regular Game Pass, but Ultimate you get.
So
Live,
yeah, we've seen the
Game
we've
Pass.
Seen the reports that they're getting rid of the 12-month cards, which makes sense. Like, okay, like here you try out Xbox Live or whatever. Oh, this is really cool. This really works. Okay, your 3 months is up, and they send you some notification of like, hey, did you know you could have access to over 200 games and games on launch, and it will cost you, you know, $14.99 a month.
And we're hearing data from people that are on Game Pass developers. I believe it was, I want to say the developers for Indivisible, they said their sales increased when they went on Game Pass. And then the developer for CrossCode says there's twice as many people playing CrossCode on Game Pass than there are on Switch and PS4 combined. So people are playing it. I'm guessing there's probably some sort of deal in place based on like, they probably cut you a check, because we hear there's like a deal with PS Plus where you get paid based on how many downloads you get, not add to library, or I think it's either add to library or downloads. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing there's some sort of placement in Game Pass where if your game's successful in Game Pass, you will see a bigger check. So we're seeing developers take advantage of Game Pass, or not take advantage, they're seeing the benefits of being on a subscription service as opposed to being out there by themselves.
Right, and let's take a game like CrossCode, and let's say that, you know, people are playing it and they're enjoying it, and it stays on Game Pass for 6 or 8 months, and then it comes off Game Pass. Like, and then you want to, you hear from your buddy that it's great and you want to play it, and you're like, oh, how did you play it? I played it on Game Pass. Oh, it's not there anymore, but it's on sale for $10. Dude, that's totally worth $10. Just buy it. You know, yeah. And that's going to be word of mouth, and you can't replace that because there's a majority of those people that would maybe have never have played CrossCode if it wasn't on Game Pass. You know, so it's such a fine line of like, is, you know, like, in this day and age, like we've talked about, and it'll depend on what happens in the next 2 to 3 years. But if Microsoft is building a foundation around Game Pass and the Play Anywhere aspect of that, they're almost truly accomplishing with Android support on xCloud coming in this fall, and, you know, playing on multiple consoles, to the point of where, like, they are maybe going to where Xbox is going to be something that's just an app, like iTunes. Like, Xbox is going to be iTunes. Like, oh, if you want to listen to something, you listen to it on iTunes, or you click on the Xbox app if you want to play a game. And if they can grab that market, the console war doesn't matter because they have a bigger market.
Yeah. You know, completely agree. Yeah, they're going for market share. Microsoft's a software company at its core, and they're going the software route with the Xbox brand. It just makes sense to it. With that said, going into this holiday season, both consoles are on the shelf. What are you getting?
I'm going to get a PlayStation because I can't play the stuff I want to play anywhere else. So in terms of, I can play on a PC. I can play on, you know, hopefully on my Android that I can maybe mirror on the phone. You know, mirror onto a phone or onto a TV, or hopefully, you know, by September, October, or early 2021, I'll have an app on my Roku or my Fire Stick or anything that I have in my house, a Chromecast, like that I can be able to play on and play my Xbox games on there, or I'll just play them on my PC. Because as the Game Pass service increases and they continue to do this, they're going to get the PC crowd. And if there's a game that I really enjoy, or as an example, like we talked about with Destiny, if you're playing Destiny on Game Pass and you really enjoy it, and 6 months down the road it comes off Game Pass, like, you're going to buy it because you're invested in the ecosystem of the game.
Yeah. Are you still tempted to maybe get an Xbox One?
Yeah, I know. I'm looking for them now. Like, I've been looking on, like, the all digital. I've been looking a little bit down here while I'm in Virginia. Like, I'm probably in the next 2 months going to buy an Xbox One.
Yeah. So there's a chance, like, in best case scenario for you, Black Friday, whatever that looks like, mm-hmm. that you could end up picking up a PS5 and an Xbox One.
I'll have an Xbox One before Halloween if I come across the right deal. Yeah. I kind of want the all digital, but at the same time, I don't know if I really want to handcuff myself because 360 games and Xbox One games will just continue to drop in price, whether they're on Game Pass or on digitally. So I can go into stores and, you know, like, I'm not a huge fan of GameStop, but I can go in there if I want to and look at something, or I can look at that back end cap of a Walmart, a Target, you know, or random places that you see sometimes sell games and pick up something for $10 or $15 that I never played on Xbox. But at the same time, I would still be content spending around $150 to $200 on an Xbox One all digital, which is very hard to find right now. And plugging that into my TV and upgrading to Game Pass Ultimate and just going through and playing games.
Yeah, and then you'll definitely get $200 worth of entertainment. Yeah.
And then this fall,
in the next 2 years from now.
Yeah, this fall I'll be able to play. I can play Destiny on there on the third platform if I want to. I can play Halo Infinite if I want to. I can play the other Halo games that I haven't played before if I want to. And more stuff coming to Grounded, I'll be able to play, that comes out this week that we're talking about checking out. Anything that's coming, Hellblade. I still haven't played the first Hellblade, so that would be something I would love to just, you know, put my feet up. You know, when I played Last of Us 2, I played outside of my office, which is the first game that I've played outside of my office in a long time. And it was refreshing to sit on a couch and play a video game and you know, still be in conversation versus putting my headphones on, sitting in my office and being oblivious to the rest of the world, which is why I was originally looking at Stadia. But now, knowing what we know about Game Pass Ultimate, like, and being able to possibly play on the X, you know, play on xCloud, I'm looking at clips from my phone to see if it's something, you know, like, if my phone can run it well enough I can clip the controller to my phone, clip my phone to it, and then also just having that, you know, that Xbox console, whether it's, you know, I don't think I'll buy an Xbox One, it'll be a 1S or the all digital, but I also don't have a problem buying it third party, but just to expose myself to more of that stuff. And I, for the most part, I'll pretty much be set for a little while until in 18 months or 24 months when Xbox Series X starts bringing out first-party exclusive games, that's around the time where you either have a redesign or you have a slight price drop anyways.
Yep, depending on where it goes. You know, if PlayStation kills them, there could be a price drop, you know, because, like, PlayStation still... Well, owns like the hearts and minds of a lot of people. You know,
yeah,
social
and did
media,
you see all the rumors and about Sony's expectation is a 5-year life cycle on PS5?
Yeah, I did see that, which probably means we will get the Pro, you know, out
or,
within like 5 years.
Well, no, I meant like I think you might get a you might start hearing rumblings of PS6 in 4 to 6 years or 4 to 5 years or whatever that upgrade is going to be if it's a Pro or if it's not a Pro. I don't think they're going to wait 5 years for a Pro. But I think that it also means that if their projected sales numbers are as high as they are, it could also mean a more competitive price to get people to buy in earlier.
Yeah, because you don't want to have people buy in at an expensive price knowing a couple years you're going to try and get them to buy in. Because we're not dealing with phones. People have a lower tolerance for...
But I'm
huge
saying
investments consistently.
If they come out in early August and they say $400... Like, for the PS5, Microsoft, I don't think, can sell their Series X at $400.
Yeah, they couldn't, but I can see them then, if they have to sell it for more than the PS, than a Sony console, then that's when just every system comes with Game Pass.
Right.
Just to, like...
To offset it.
Add value to that box without costing them money.
Yeah, it's $450 or $500, but you get a free year of Game Pass, you know?
Yeah, $100 value, or they'll put the like thousands of dollar value based on how many games are in Game Pass. And hell, they could just pre-download the games from Game Pass onto the system and just be like, here's Halo's already downloaded. You could play it without installing it.
Yeah, so it's a weird state, but I'm at the point right now where I don't care how much other stuff you show. You've got to show me some of the meat and potatoes right now. You showed me enough toppings. You showed me enough frosting. You showed me enough side dishes. Like, it's time for you to tell me how much your console costs and when I can get it. Because if you start, you know, analytically breaking this down, we're like 6 to 8 paychecks for these people. Like, there is some serious planning that has to be done. Yeah. More than likely, there are already people that are already like this gung-ho about it are probably setting aside some amount of money because they've got a number in their head, whether it's $500 or $600 or $400. And they're starting to set aside some kind of money, but at the same time, like, you need to put a tangible figure on it so people know what they need to do, and then they need to figure out how they're going to do it.
Also, people need to be able to pre-order it, and then if they can't when it sells out in one retailer, pre-orders, they need to be able to like look for other ones, and then you need to like release waves of pre-orders. They can't wait too long. I'm hoping this rumored August 6th event will be Sony just being like, all right, we can't wait that long. Let's just put a date on it. Pre-orders go live then, because I know I'm gonna pre-order it and I'm gonna hopefully get one. Mm-hmm. Though they're, you know, scalpers will probably, you know, snipe them before I do. So I need that data. I need that time from either console. Like, I probably pre-order an Xbox One Series or an Xbox Series X as well, just so I can have the option. I'll pre-order on Amazon because they don't charge you till it ships. Mm-hmm. And I'll probably have both pre-orders in my cart and just wait for more announcements to happen.
Right.
And then cancel which one I don't like or see if a friend needs a pre-order. But they need to get that done soon. I'm not looking forward to them being like, all right, pre-orders go live in 2 weeks at midnight.
Just a fight.
Then I'm gonna have to...
Yeah, like to set an alarm to wake yourself up to make sure you remember to pre-order console is just dumb.
Yeah, and then make sure I'm logged in and then hope the site doesn't crash.
Mm-hmm.
Not looking forward to that. But yeah, I'm leaning towards PlayStation just because of the same points that you brought up of just Game Pass on my PC is really nice. I'm going to talk about Game Pass a little later and what we're playing. You know, it's a really good service. And my 1060 isn't outdated yet, so I can play most games on high. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to drop from ultra to high, which is fine with me because that's still as good as a console.
Do you really have a you do have a monitor to take proper advantage of it though?
Yeah, my monitor is a HDR and all that stuff, so I'm just like, I you know, but again, like, I knock my stuff, I only use the 1080p setting,
right?
I do not mess with anything
else.
Yeah,
and that's what
it's
I'm curious about. Like, there's been a lot of discussion around 4k 60 frames per second, and if you really go into, like, everybody talks about PC Master Race, if you really dig into building a PC that can consistently give you 60 frames per second at 4k, that PC will cost more than whatever the Xbox Series X or PlayStation 5's cost. Guaranteed.
Yeah. And just also, like, PCs are getting better, but they're still a fucking headache when it comes to playing games. I download stuff from Game Pass frequently, and there's often times where I boot up the game and it's like, oh, why are all the textures not loaded in? Mm-hmm. Oh, let me go here and mess with the settings and all that stuff. So, like, there's still problems with PC gaming. Yeah. Outside of price, of just configuration. I don't know how many times I've accidentally changed my audio settings to where they're coming out of, like, the second monitor and I can't get them to go to my headphones.
Yeah.
Or just weird PC garbage that I constantly have to deal with.
Versus just plugging a USB cable into your console and putting your headphones on and playing. Or plugging something into your controller and playing.
Yeah, so PC still needs a long way to go, but it's getting better. And I think, you know, X Cloud Game Pass stuff is making it easier, more and more people are, you know, getting used to playing video games on their phone with a controller, which I thought was a crazy thing that would never happen, but I totally found myself doing it with X Cloud.
Well, yeah, like Call of Duty Mobile has done really well, and I'm good friends with a PR guy for Call of Duty Mobile, and I said, what about controller support? And he's like, not yet. He's like, but they know it's like, if you look at mobile games, it's like the number one most requested feature is controller support. Whether it's on a because people are content now with taking an iPad. You know, my daughter just bought like a 10.5-inch iPad, and she was watching it in the car on the way down here. And I looked over and looked at it. And I'm like, I could totally play a game on that, like, and be fine.
Yeah, get a mount for it or a kickstand for it, and you're good. So. I mean, I can play the Switch on its kickstand and be too fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so please let us know your thoughts and where you stand on this, and I just leave the fanboyism out. Like, I just don't want to hear it anymore. Like, yes, I understand that we came from a very heavy Sony background, but if you're not, again, like I said before, if you're not taking the time to look at the competitor and look at what they're doing and just to feel like it's not Sony, I don't care, or it's not Microsoft, I don't care, like, you're doing yourself a massive disservice in terms of the accessibility of gaming now. Just a massive disservice. I can tell you from personal experience, having blind, fully trusting faith in any one thing or person is catastrophic to you in the long run.
Yeah, you're just bound to be disappointed. And then you're that crazy person who's fighting for something, even though you probably know in your head that it doesn't make sense and it's not to your best interest.
I'm all for everybody pitching their end, like just like you're a fan of a team and things like that. But you also have to, like, I love my Lions, I love the Tigers and you know, and the Pistons. But newsflash, there are teams that are better than them on a very regular basis. And I understand and see that. And they'll have their ups and downs, as every team does. But just to sit there and think, oh, my team's going to win 100 games no matter what. The Tigers are going to win 100 games in a 60-game season. Like, that's what some of you guys sound like.
Yeah.
So.
Or think the White Sox are going to be good this season, another 1-4.
All right, so what we're playing and watching. Do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first. Okay. It's mostly two games that I'm playing. So Carrion, that like reverse like horror game, it hit Game Pass on PC. I was gonna pick it up on Switch, but then I saw it was on Game Pass.
The one that was just
so
on the
I'm
showcase.
Basically using Game. Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it came out so soon. Yeah. So.
Yeah, from the Devolver Digital showcase. Yeah, it came out on the 23rd. I was gonna pick it up on Switch. But then I found out it was on Game Pass, so I'm like, well, let me use Game Pass as a demo for potentially picking this up on Switch. So this is, again, it's like a reverse like horror game, scary game. Sometimes I say horror wrong, and people think I'm saying horror, so I gotta like enunciate.
It's a super horror game.
yeah, it's a side scroller where you play as the monster, the experiment that escapes the lab. And you're trying to escape slash kill anyone that gets in your way. You play like this big blob with tentacles, and you're just going through like basically just simple room puzzles, at least the first couple hours that I'm in. And you're just going in and just killing all the humans. As you make progress, there's a couple ways you can like upgrade your character, or one specific way to upgrade your character. It's just finding rooms that have upgrades for you. It's fun. I like it as a concept, but it's a little lacking for me. Something's just not clicking. I feel like as the monster, there's just not enough impact or like oomph to it, where I'm getting the kills, but I'm not really, I feel like there's not enough feedback, either audio visual wise or something as simple as like Rumble, that's just preventing me from like fully feeling like I'm like this monster that can destroy everything. But it's still a cool concept. It's just not what I was expecting. When I saw the trailer, I'm like, okay, this looks like this could be real fun. And instead I'm like, oh, it's fine. Which is, well, I'm kind of glad it's on Game Pass, because I was able to, you know, kind of save myself $20. If I bought it on the Switch, which I think it might be better on the Switch, just because for some reason, anytime a game is like retro looking or a side scroller, I feel like Switch portable mode was made for it.
Right.
And I probably would prefer this on the Switch, but at $20, I might have been a little disappointed. I'll probably pick it up eventually if it goes on sale for the Switch, but until then, I'll play it on Game Pass.
So using almost $5 a month as like a free demo sort of kind of thing.
Yeah, basically. And that's kind of what I do for a lot of Game Pass stuff, because a lot of indie stuff like launches on Game Pass right away. Again, fun concept. It's just missing an element that just isn't fully clicking with me. Maybe it'll get better as I like get through the game. I'm probably like, I think like a third or like halfway through the game. So I'm hoping something happens in the second half that like really hooks me and makes me want to play more. And then the other game I'm playing is Atomic Crops. This is like a twist on like those farming simulator type games. It's like Stardew Valley, but a nuclear blast hits. So you are a farmer. So all you're doing is tending to your crops, but you have a very tight day-night cycle that you're working with. So during the day, you're just finding crops, planting them, watering them, fertilizing them. And then at night, the monsters come out and will attack your crops. So you're just trying to defend your crops while you're waiting for them to grow so you can harvest them. And then you turn the harvest in for upgrades for your weapon, increase your health, make farming easier, get new crops to grow. It's got a really cool art style. Like, I really like the, has a really good opening animation, and then the game is like very pixelated looking. It's a weird game. Like, it's like that type of art that it's like cute and disgusting, if that makes sense. Okay. You know, like they're going for like a very specific look of like, here's cutesy characters, but they're kind of like zombified, or like they look like they've been through a nuclear blast. So I'm enjoying that. The only thing that kind of is a bummer is like, it is also a roguelike
sort of
experience. So once you die, that's it. You have to start the game over again. And you have one life, one health bar. So you're just trying to survive. I made it out of summer once. It's like spring, summer, fall, winter. I made it out of summer once in a couple hours that I've played, and just slowly figuring out the best way to maximize my very limited time, because each day lasts maybe like 2 to 5 minutes.
Wow.
And you only get like 3 days per season, so you're trying to like do whatever you can to maximize your time spent. So I'm getting through that game. I was sent a review code from the publisher, so hopefully I'll have more time this week so I can do a full review next week.
Nice.
So that's it for playing. Watching, me and Sarah have been spending the weekend watching different scary movies. So this weekend, watched The Black Coat's Daughter, Before I Wake, and Cam Girl. Before I Wake and Cam Girl, I highly recommend them. Cam Girl's pretty self-explanatory, based on a title. It's a Cam Girl who someone basically is stealing her identity, and it's like a weird fucked up movie. And then Before I Wake is like really interesting. It's almost like a fantasy movie more than like an actual scary movie. But it's just about a kid whose dreams, when he falls asleep, his dreams become a reality in the, you know, actual world that people can interact with. So if a kid has a nightmare, the monsters will be interacting around him, like terrorizing his parents, basically. Really cool movie. Surprisingly, like, heartwarming, you know, like it was in the scary movie category on Netflix, and we picked it, and I was expecting it to be, you know, terrifying, but in reality it was like, oh, this is like a nice movie about like a family. It just has the nightmare element to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then watched a TV show last week called Dragula. It's like RuPaul's Drag Race mixed with Face Off, which is, it's a reality show. It was really interesting. It was just, you know, just drag queens doing different themes that would fit in the, like, the Halloween, you know, motif. So I wasn't expecting to like it, but I was like, this is really interesting. They spent a little too much time on the drama. I would have loved if they would have been more face-off and spent on, like, the craftsmanship, because, like, some of the stuff that they put together with, like, the makeup and outfits is really interesting. But they spend more time, unfortunately, on, like, the drama. Between the contestants. But there's like two seasons on Netflix. I think another season's coming, but COVID prevented it. So just another show I'll keep watching.
Nice.
And then, Dave, I saved this one so we could probably talk about it a little bit. But I have a guilty pleasure, and that is watching baseball during coronavirus.
So, yeah, we used that for a lot of background noise, like listening to baseball games in the car, you know, a 13-hour ride from Detroit to Virginia, with kidney stones, recovering from kidney stones, by the way. Not the best trip. but it's been refreshing to have baseball back. At this point in time, like over this weekend and when I'm laying down, you know, just kind of trying to take it easy, whether, you know, because we did some whitewater rafting this week, we did some other, you know, museums and stuff, and you come home or come back to the place at like 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and just to turn on ESPN or Fox Sports and just to, I don't even care who's been playing, it's just there's games on, and it's great. The digital fans look a little creepy. I don't mind the cardboard cutouts. And
we don't have digital fans.
Okay. Fox Network over the weekend was doing digital fans. So if your game is on national broadcast television, which your White Sox and my Tigers won't be this year. you'll see, like, they had like the Dodger Giants game over the weekend, and they were doing like, they had the digital fans like doing the wave in the outfield.
That's weird. I gotta look at video for that.
So it look, apparently they've been doing this in like the Premier League in soccer for like a while, like since soccer's been playing, they were doing some digital fans, but I don't know much about that. But I do, like, somebody mentioned it, Branham in our Discord server mentioned, like, when he was watching some exhibition games where they remove the sound of the ball hitting the bat, like they're not picking that sound up. And I'm not getting that as in as many, but it's definitely, it does not seem like it's as pronounced as it would be. And I don't know if that's because fans aren't in the ballpark, that you, like, the sound is more amplified because fans are in the ballpark.
I think, what they're doing is, I know there was a lot of debate during the NBA season on,
oh, because all you're going to hear is like sneaker squeaks and cursing.
Yes. Like, yeah. And then, like, there was a debate on, like, do we mute the players because they also curse a lot? So yeah. I'm wondering if they, like, muted the baseball players because you can't hide that anymore.
Yeah, I know. But I feel like, I guess if you point the sound cone at the plate to get the sound of the crack of the bat, you get whatever conversation's going on between the umpire, the batter, and the catcher.
Yeah, yeah. Which is probably way more mundane now that there's no fans, because I'm sure it's real wild when there's like fans to cover them.
I think it sucks.
It's just weird, though.
I think it sucks what's happening with the Marlins right now. Like, that's.
I think the season should be canceled.
It's bad. And it sounds like that. Like, they knew that they had positive player. They had players that tested positive like on a Sunday afternoon, and they still played Sunday night, which is really bad. And then Major League Baseball has now postponed any Marlins game for like the rest of the week. And then, you know, you get into the debate of like makeup games and are they important? And, you know, like, oh, it doesn't matter to the Marlins because they might not be competing, but it does matter to the team that maybe needs those one or two wins to help them in the standings. So, like, it's getting really bad. And I'm not as concerned about it from the NHL and the NBA standpoint, because they're kind of trying to, they're doing a, looks like on paper, they're doing a pretty good job of implementing a bubble system. I am very worried about baseball, and I'm even more worried about football.
Yes. I'm hoping that they just move the season to the Field of Dreams. I would love if the whole baseball season was just being done at the Field of Dreams, because then you have a reason for not having fans there,
mm-hmm.
and it'll have a cool look to it, and it'll be unique to the season, because I think they're doing one game. The Sox and the Cardinals will be at the Field of Dreams, which I don't even know where that's at. I think it's Ohio?
I think it's Iowa.
Or somewhere? Or Idaho? Yeah, so Iowa. So it's a place like no one lives already, so you'll probably do better in terms of like
Discussion about doing something at Disney World of Sports where there's like seven fields, or in Arizona's like spring training facilities where within like a 2 mile radius there's like 12 fields, where you can implement a bubble system. And but these people are like, these teams are traveling from Philadelphia to Miami, or Philadelphia to Baltimore, Baltimore to Detroit, Pittsburgh. Like, I don't, they might be traveling on a private plane, but they're staying in hotels. Like, just the, you know, they're in and out of hotels, or they're in and out of their house, or they're working with their kids and they're exposed. And like, I'm not, you know, like, we can't, you know, live in, you know, in this constant fear around this virus. Like, I do believe that we need to try to establish some new systems or some system in place to go through relative normalcy. But at the same time, like, you need to be careful. And like, this is why you can't have fans at the game, though, because if they would have sold tickets to that Marlins Phillies game, they would have had X amount of thousand of people that found out 2 hours before the game that there's not a game.
Yeah. Or the thousands of people that would have then gotten sick somehow,
right?
Because, you know, just need contact to just mess everything up. Yeah, no, it's weird. I think I have a feeling if there's another outbreak like there is with the Marlins, then the season will probably be canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll and at this point, I don't think you come back from a second cancellation.
Right.
I think if it gets canceled, like, it's not going to be postponed. It's just like, no, we're just canceled. Like, there was a scare with Renteria. He's, you know, the White Sox manager. He woke up Sunday or Monday, he woke up and he wasn't feeling well. He had cold-like symptoms, and turned out he was fine. Though you can't find out if you have COVID that fast. But, you know, they said, he was fine. He just might have like a cold, or he just wasn't feeling well.
MLB has very, very quick
tests.
Scary. Yeah, but so they have.
It's hard to get a conclusive test like that fast.
So, I mean, I hope that, you know, like, teams learn from this. I hope the NFL pays very close attention to what MLB is doing right and what MLB is doing wrong. And just to make sure that, because that's the huge concern is, like, is a team going to hide it because they don't want to bench their starting quarterback? You know?
Yeah. I don't trust Jerry Jones.
There's
certain, I don't trust Belichick.
Yeah. Like, Cam Newton has COVID. No, he doesn't. He has an upper respiratory issue.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. He just puts everyone on his, like, injured chart day before the game. So, all right.
Cool. For me,
what are you playing?
I picked up, before we went on the trip, I picked up Paper Mario and the Origami King. I'm a couple hours into it. I'm really having a hard time actually playing the game without Owen going, I want to play. So one of the things that I did pick up, and I haven't used it as much as I wanted to, just because I've actually had the ability to play on the big screen. I prefer to play on the Switch on a TV versus in handheld mode. I know I'm weird like that, but but this thing that I picked up will help me actually play the game in handheld, play Switch in handheld mode more. So I picked up a Hori Nintendo Switch Split Pad Pro. It's like a Daemon X Machina edition. This is actually, like, so these slide onto the side of the Switch controller, obviously. You can still dock it with these things on there, but they are, I would have to say, like 50% bigger than the current Switch controllers. And they actually have some back triggers on them, too, that you can map some things to it. It's got some turbo stuff. Like, I don't care about the turbos, but the analog sticks feel way better. The buttons feel much, you know, I like how they're feeling. I was playing a couple hours last night, like an hour, hour and a half, like when I was laying in bed before I went to sleep. And I did enjoy doing that. My hands didn't tighten up and cramp up as fast as I normally do. Even Owen, my 4-year-old, has said he thinks it's easier, but then today he wanted the Switch Joy-Cons back, so I don't know what he really thinks. So I'm enjoying those, like, for $50, like, because a new set of Joy-Cons costs like $80 or $90 right now, and they're going to drift anyways. Like, these I'm pretty happy with. They don't have any of the rumble feature to them, and they're not independent, like, controllers, like, so they actually do affect the battery life of the Switch, because they're pulling from the Switch itself versus the Joy-Cons that have their own batteries in them. But they're $50, and I think for an adult, they definitely make holding the Switch a lot easier. So check those out If okay. you know, I like them a lot. I might try to do like a video review or something with them, with like showing them in, you know, showing you guys them in my hands and on the Switch and stuff. But we'll see how that, if that works out or doesn't work out. But overall, like, I think they're well worth the $50 in comparison to Joy-Cons. So, but you can't use them again. You have to,
and they go on sale from time to time.
You just have to pay attention to, because you can't use them as independent. You can't use them as player one and player two controller. Like, they don't work that way. They are strictly for sliding onto the side of the Switch and playing it that way. That's all they do. But it actually has a D-pad, and you know, instead of like the four buttons again, it actually has a tangible D-pad, and then the red analog sticks don't feel like nubs. So. I like that a lot. But in terms of Paper Mario, I've played some of the Paper Marios previously, not the last couple of years, but I am enjoying this one a lot. The RPG-like element to it, the battle system is kind of interesting. It's a circular battle system where you have to spend some of the time before the battle starts trying to line up the enemies. So like you're essentially on like a wheel, and Mario is in the middle, and there's like four or five circles going out from him, and within those circles you can rotate and move the enemies around, and in terms of a strategy thing, and the game rewards you for like lining them up like in a row of four, or in a grouping in a block of four, like, you know, left, right, center, and you have to slide them up and down. Sometimes you have to spin them around, and there's a timer on that as well. You can extend that timer by spending some coins during the battle system. As you like rescue more toads throughout the world, the toads actually sit in the stands and cheer you on while you're playing, and you can spend coins on them, and they can actually give you aids where they'll actually give you additional health. They'll actually damage some of the enemies for you. But the battle system is very basic. Like, once you get the good understanding of the positioning and the lineup mechanic, and then it's just the timing thing, as you know, like of hitting A like right as the attack's about to happen, whether you're doing a jump attack or a hammer attack. That all seems really good. Way more reading than I ever remember, but that's fine. It's a Mario game. I just sometimes wish that, I don't want voice acting in Mario games, but I just wish that somebody would read the text bubbles to you. Just be a little bit more refreshing sometimes. But I mean, the mechanic is great. There's this confetti mechanic to it, which is, you know, like you hit trees and you hit flowers, or you get confetti given to you as like a resource, and you use the confetti to fill the holes in. When you fill the holes in, it can unlock access to an area, or you get a bunch of coins. I don't know if this is just the way it's been in Mario games over time, but I feel like I have like 7,000 or 8,000 coins, and I'm like maybe like 10 or 15% into the game. The intention is to spend a lot of the coins on toads and to spend the coins on extending the timers that you have for the battle system. That's the only thing I can really see that the coins are being spent on now. I do see a couple shops where there's some upgrades being made, but I haven't even gotten to like the first mini boss. And the concept behind Paper Mario has always been fantastic in terms of like the way that the characters react, and using origami into this, where you're fighting folded soldiers now. You know, so they definitely like go super into the paper aspect of it, but I'm having a really good time with it. It's simplicity, but also has enough depth to it that it's keeping me engaged of trying to figure out what happens next and trying to get better at the battle system, and to get just to be more efficient and looking at it as like, okay, how can I quickly line these up? Because like that timer going down, like you have like 30 seconds initially, like there's some intensity to that, and then just still balancing your health out just to make sure that you're in good enough shape, because for the most part, if you do things right, you don't even really have at least so far, the enemy doesn't even have a chance to attack you. You get like two ring turns and you get two damage turns, and if you do it correctly, like all the enemies are dead. I'm getting to the point now where there's a couple more that have a little bit of higher hit points, and you know, timing and execution is a little bit more important. But I picked it up for like $50, I think. So like it's good. Internet here is terrible. It took because I didn't do it before, and I was just gonna check out some things, because knowing my luck, like something cool was gonna happen in Destiny this week while I was gone, and it didn't happen today. I'd reset. So that's fine. But I got here Saturday afternoon, and Destiny finished downloading this morning. It's
fun.
Yeah, it's a 100 gig game, and it finished downloading this morning. So the internet is rough. It's good enough that I can obviously talk to Michael on Discord, and he can watch YouTube, and you know, like we can, you know, stream shows and things like that. But doing a physical download definitely was not the best thing in the world on the thing. And I brought Spider-Man with me, and I brought Horizon Zero Dawn with me, but neither one of those are installed on my son's PS4 that I brought with me. So I don't know if I want to stick a disc in there and see how long that's going to take to install, since Destiny took as long as it did. So I might just stick with Paper Mario whenever I can keep Owen away from the Switch.
And then Neversong, right?
I just got Neversong, but I haven't had a chance to play it yet. So that will be next week. So I'll get that done this week. So we got Neversong for review. So I will definitely check that out. And there's no reason I shouldn't be able to review that next week. It's not a very long game. I didn't get to watch anything. So, I mean, the last thing I remember watching religiously was the Xbox showcase, other than watching baseball. And most of, like I said, that's just kind of been background noise, or, you know, watching the Tigers be above 500 for like a day and then get their butt kicked like the next day. So,
yeah. So.
All right. We're going to jump into a couple questions really quick. So we get a question from Chris, from Active Quest Podcast, right?
Yes.
Do you casually listen to gaming soundtracks? And if so, what are your favorites? I don't listen to gaming soundtracks. Sorry.
I do. I do. Lately, it's been a lot of like the chiptune type of soundtracks. Earth Knight's soundtrack was like the last one that I remember I purchased and I listened to like fully.
We talking about that one.
But yeah. Other soundtracks. Yeah. It's cool game, but the soundtrack is just like what makes that like package for me. And then there's just other random games, or not random, but like non-chiptune games. Like the Tetris Effect soundtrack is downloaded on my phone. The Journey soundtrack, which every time I'm like out and about and shuffle, the Journey soundtrack comes on. It always feels weird just because that game puts me in a specific mindset, or like brings back memories of Journey. Old soundtrack that I really like, Shatter, I think is like a timeless soundtrack. The Wipeout games. There's a lot of video game soundtracks that I listen to that are also like on my playlist, like downloaded on my phone.
And to be fair,
those are the ones that come to mind.
I'm not as mobile as Michael is, in terms of like my job commute is like 10 minutes. And if I'm usually going anywhere other than going to work, there's usually somebody else in the car with me. And then if I go on any kind of extended long trip solo, which has been rare lately, but it's just usually ends up being like an audiobook for me. If like I'm gonna be in a car for like 10 hours, it usually ends up being like an audiobook. So then just growing up, like music wasn't predominant in my house. So there was a lot of talk radio in my house, sadly, and in the car with my parents. I don't have a huge attachment to music. I respect it, I understand it, I do enjoy it, but not enough to where I would sit there and, you know, I don't think I could take a 6-hour car ride and just listen to music. Like I think I'd go nuts. So
I don't think I've ever heard anyone say like I respect music.
I like music. I enjoy music. Like I notice it in video games when there's a good song, but I'm not like one of these people that would just sit there and every once in a while I'll play music on my way to work, whether it's like something on the radio or something like that, but for the most part it's not something that even walking, you know, like even when you and I are walking around in Los Angeles, like you would probably be content putting your headphones in, listening to music. And I would probably put my phone headphones in and listen to like an ESPN podcast to catch up on what happened in baseball. That's just kind of how I am. So,
yeah.
Next question is from at Lebedsky on Twitter. He's been a big contributor, a big follower for a long time, going all the way back for a while. He says, with Cuphead coming to PS4, which was announced today, do you think more Xbox games will be coming to PlayStation? Halo Master Chief Collection or State of Decay would be what I would want. LOL. I feel like Cuphead was a non... Is that a Microsoft studio?
No. They just... I think they put money into it, but they don't own the studio or
right.
the IP.
So they probably put money into it for it's 24 months, if I had to guess right. We're probably about 2 years away, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so because it was like E3 or something like that when they announced it. I think that you would see that. I don't think that you would ever, especially with xCloud, like I don't think you'll ever see a Microsoft Studio game, newly acquired Microsoft Studio games or IPs going forward being on PlayStation.
Yeah, the only ones I can see ever coming are studio or games that have a history on multiple platforms, which is why Minecraft, you know, is on all the platforms, because it has a history on that. Just like, I think if Microsoft purchased NetherRealm or any of the AT&T studios, mm-hmm. or the Warner studios, Mortal Kombat would probably be on everything, because then it's just like an advertisement for like Game Pass or something. Right. I think if there's a history behind the franchise, you know, being on like PlayStation or Nintendo, you'll still see those games come out. But their first party, their real first party games where they own the IP from the start of the IP, those probably will never come over.
You'll never see Halo.
xCloud. Yeah.
You'll never see Halo on a PlayStation console. You'll never see Hellblade on a PlayStation console. Those are the two that come to mind. You'll never see Forza. Yeah, I guess I forgot Hellblade came to it. But you'll like Hellblade 2, you know, or the Hellblade franchise. You'll never see Forza on a PlayStation console. So
no. You'll see it on a Sony Xperia phone with xCloud. That's probably as far as you'll ever.
So Stefan Ren writes in our Facebook group, how many games do you guys have all together? Do you catalog them like Josh does? I don't know how many games I have, and the closest I get to cataloging them is a few random folders I have on my PlayStation. So
I know the exact number because I was downloading the game earlier on the PS4.
Cheater.
Just the PS4, I have like 458 things I can download. I don't know how many of those are betas.
I think you can sort it by game, I thought. Or by purchase.
I think so, but I think some betas still pop up. Yeah. So you can hide ones you don't want. So I have a bunch on the PS4. My PS3, I probably have like 100 games downloaded. And then like physical games, I actually cut my library down of physical games. Like PS3, I probably have like 50 PS3 physical games. And then PS4 physical games, I probably have like 20. Yeah,
I get,
and that those are all that are my collection outside of some random PS2 games and PS1.
I mean, right, wrong, or indifferent. I get rid of a lot of my stuff that I'm not playing, or I get tired of looking at it, I'll sell it, I'll trade it. Like, I just, if I'm not going to play it, I don't see any point in keeping it. So there's only been a small handful of times that I've regretted doing that, and that feeling went away like a couple hours later.
I basically have limited myself to physical games, to whatever can fit on the tiny 3-shelf bookcase behind me. And if there's no room on that case, I then look at games and then I just trade them in, and I don't care what value I get for the trade in. I just like, okay, this game never gonna play it, this game never gonna play it. I need 2 spots on my shelf. I'm gonna put that in a trade in pile, and then I sell it to GameStop for $1. Like I'm limiting myself to just that.
I was actually looking at trading in some stuff, speaking of that, on, you know, some PSVR games that I picked up like on sales and stuff like that, like checking GameStop's trade value. PSVR must be doing a good enough, but not well enough physically, because like GameStop has no demand for the VR games at all.
Just send them in a box to me.
I guess I could send some of them to you. All right, our last question of the night. This one's from Michael, from Josh Insang. When will the podcast be rebranded as Don't Be a Dick Gaming? It still works out to being DDG.
I guess technically it does, you know, you'd only capitalize to
Don't Dick Gaming.
But Don't Dick Gaming. Yeah. I just don't know if, like, I would be fine going to an E3 appointment. I'm like, oh, I'm from Don't Be a Dick Gaming. I don't know if Dave will be fine going to an E3 appointment and be like, I'm Dave Hunt from Don't Be a Dick Gaming. I feel like he would be tired of that after the third interaction.
We're too early on. I think I put some kind of like half joking CEO tweet or whatever. It's too early on in our life cycle to rebrand. You know, but it definitely could be something that could go on a t-shirt, though.
Yeah, it's Don't Be a Dick.
So
with a horrible drawing.
Yeah, of a dick. Do I have a dick on my face?
Hey, maybe if we change to Don't Be a Dick Gaming, we can finally get like that coveted Blue Chew dick pill advertisement sponsorship that all podcasts must obtain. Listen, like, your podcast ain't shit until you advertise Audible, Squarespace, or Blue Chew. Like, those are the three sponsorships that you must acquire for your podcast to matter.
Oh my goodness.
So if any of those companies are listening, we'll sling your dick pills.
Michael at digitaldaysgaming.com. All right, spotlight really quick. My spotlight, if you haven't listened to it, please go back and listen to the Xbox Showcase episode. Those are ones that we'd like to have a lot of fun doing, so that's my spotlight. Go listen to that, please.
My spotlight then will be go back and listen to the PlayStation Showcase and hear our views on it, because I feel like we're not... We are leaning towards PlayStation, but our opinions from each showcase was like, they need to do more to impress us. You know, like, we're not, like, cheerleading one over the other too much. We're cheerleading Game Pass, and we're also cheerleading PlayStation's exclusives, but I don't think we're cheerleading either console specifically too much.
Yep. And then our social networks, like I said, are linked in the show notes, but if you want to follow us on Twitter, the main account is at Digital Days Pod. Michael's account is at the first MJC, and mine is at Good Dave Hunt. You can join the Facebook group, join in those conversations, Discord channel as well. You can join in those conversations. And then our Patreon. So patreon.com/digitaldaysgaming. $1 is our tip jar of a way for you just to show support. And that essentially pays for 1 month of podcast hosting. So if you choose to do that, that's awesome and appreciate it. $3 is get you Discord access. So what that means is that it is not an exclusive Discord server, but it is a Discord channel within our server. So you do not have to be in this tier to be in the Discord, but there is a private channel of Discord only, or I'm sorry, of a Patreon only / Twitch subscribers that are in there. Need to figure out a way to get that channel a little bit more active, but overall the way that it gets more active is more users in there, more people talking. And then $5 gets you 24-hour early access to the weekly numbered episode. We don't put the bonus content or anything like that behind there. I think we did the Destiny episode, but any of the vital showcases or things that are very heavily newsworthy, they don't go behind that. And then $7 is the monthly bonus episode. So each month that you get an extra episode from us, usually non-gaming or not non-news gaming related. The first three episodes we did one for retail stories. The second episode was our E3 memories. The third episode was a little bit of our gaming podcasting journalism origin story. We're still looking for some suggestions for the fourth one. We'll have to record that next week when I'm back home, and to get that published for all of our Patreon supporters. Again, please do not feel obligated to support us on Patreon. It is just another form of ways that we felt it was important to allow people to support us. There are many of you that have done that, and you are all loved and appreciated. There are a bunch of you that support us on Twitch as well, and that is also loved and appreciated. And then if you so choose, in the show notes, there is a PayPal direct donation link. So that's not something we're going to advertise very heavily, but it's there. If you want to give us a donation, feel free. No obligation. And please do not support us if you financially can't do that. Your listenership and sharing the show is the most important. Helping to grow the DDD community is more important than any monetization that you can give us. So. All right. That is our show for this week. So we will talk to you guys next week. Have a great week.
Don't be a dick. Also, bluechew.com, I guess. This is to advertise it now, and then they have to pay us, right? Is that how that works?
Sure.
Okay, see ya.